everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you and Tom Fairbanks. Wearing the green. If I had something green, I would be wearing it, Tom.
Well, how about green with envy? Look at those shoes that
Dylan Smith is wearing. Well, he's all decked out today for St. Patrick's Day. Dylan's got the kind of a green and white rugby shirt. He's got green shoes. Do you have green socks too, Dylan?
No, green socks. I got my green Doc Martens on, and this is a rugby shirt for the Irish national team.
Very cool, very cool. It is St. Patrick's Day, Friday, March 17th. Our radio station's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We're in our lucky 13th year on the radio show. Let's see, 35th year on now on TV and radio in the market. Worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, our live line for our telephone calls. And if folks would like to join us, the number is 790-2040. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media shout-outs on Friday, Dylan Smith, I can say it to him directly because he's here. TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, thanks for your support over the years. Appreciate it.
Right back at you, sir.
Green Valley News, Saho Rita's son, Dan Shear, and his team, Tucson Local Media Group. Their portfolio publications includes Tucson Business, Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. The Friday Focus interview today, Tucson Police Chief Chad Kazmar returns to our microphones. We're trying to bring the chief now in every quarter. Good to see you, Chief Kazmar.
Good to see both of you, too.
And let me do a further little bit of introduction for Dylan Smith. He's editor, publisher, and founder of the online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, are you still president of the Arizona Press Club?
No one has told me I'm not.
Oh,
yet,
okay.
So
all right.
I'm guessing so.
And you're still the immediate past chair of Lion Publishers?
No longer immediate. I guess I'm now the founding chair. We've started cycling through that, leaders of that national group who are trying to fix local news.
Yep, that national group. Lion is an acronym for local and online news publishers. Okay, Chief, let's get at it. We've got a huge stack of stuff for you. The perception, Chief, is that Tucson is a very unsafe city. That is the narrative that is going around. What do you say?
What I say is, as the 33rd largest city in this country, we are a major city, and sometimes those of us that are homegrown in Tucson forget, we think it's the old Pueblo, and it's a major city. It's a large city. It spans 250 square miles. It's a border city, and we have major city challenges. We're not a boutique community like Marana, Oro Valley, Sahuarita. We're not the University of Arizona or Pima College, but it is absolutely a safe place to live. I'm raising my family here. My extended family lives here. I'm proud to call myself a Tucsonan. Do we have challenges? Absolutely. But we certainly have some opportunities to do things differently, because although we're a major city, it's just small enough. I really think we can have an impact on gun crime and substance misuse disorders. And of course, topic of what we'll be talking about today are unsheltered population.
Dylan, jump in right away.
My general sense is that across the country, there's been a kind of steady increase in violent crimes happening all over. But Tucson seems to have really seen a lot of, if you're a victim, they're not minor, but, crimes that aren't especially violent, property crimes, smaller thefts, things like that. Is that just kind of a product of the stresses of the pandemic, or is there something else going on here?
So property crime last year were actually down 17%. I think COVID changed property crime. More people are working at from home. It's less opportunity for folks to be burglarized. We're actually down 4.6% violent crime last year. Our homicides were down a little bit from the prior year. Where we're really struggling is gun crime. We had 870 gun crime incidents last year. And so what we're seeing across the country and in Tucson is where, and I'll be candid, it's normally men. Two men have a problem that used to maybe exchange words and maybe have a fist fight, now is resulting in somebody pulling out primarily a gun and somebody shooting. Those road rage incidents, simple disputes. And so that's really the key area within violent crime that we're focused on this year is gun crime.
How about, is there any update on this injured police officer? people were very shocked to hear about. This officer was hit by a drunk driver in February. Can you give us an update?
I can. So I just spoke to Kyle on the way here, and he's ready for his name to be released to the community. So this is our injured officer, is Officer Kyle Lorenz. He was hired in October of 2021. He's an Operations Division West Patrol Squad 8 team member. Kyle, on February 9th in the early morning hours, was protecting a pedestrian, collision that could have, that we thought might turn to a fatality, when a drunk driver was bearing down on him. He was blocking southbound Stone. He realized the car wasn't going to stop. He couldn't move his car because he was protecting the crime scene and investigating staff. And he made the right call in trying to get out of that vehicle, and he just couldn't clear his vehicle and the oncoming vehicle quick enough. So when he dove out of the way, the impact still caught his right leg, which caused catastrophic injuries to his right leg. If it were not for the quick and decisive action of the staff that was on scene with him and deploying two tourniquets, per medical professionals within the Tucson Fire Department and University Medical Center, he would have absolutely lost his life by blood loss. So talk about heroes out on the scene that took care of their colleague and getting our young officer to the hospital where later to save their life, his life, that they had to lower the or remove the lower part of his right leg.
Does he still have a future in law enforcement?
I tell you what, I got the call that no chief wanted. I was in Washington for Major City Chiefs, and 2 hours ahead of you. Here in Tucson, I was heading to the gym, 3 a.m. your time, and got that call from our 911 center. And it's a call no chief wants, that an officer was injured and critically might not make it. So I promptly got back on a plane that morning and got back to Tucson. And the first thing when I saw Kyle in intensive care was, and his comment was, I just want to get fit for my prosthetic so I can get back to work. So
he is
a beacon of hope for our department. He just had his 25th birthday. He's a smart, courageous young man who's wanted nothing more than to be a police officer, and he wants to get back to his patrol squad. So with his passion and his attitude about his injuries, there is no doubt in my mind that he'll be back. I want to do a call to action to our community. We are fundraising. Although it was a duty-related injury, 100% of those costs are only covered for a period of time. So he has a long road ahead of him. He's a young man. So I want to encourage our community to, if you can, we are collecting donations for him. You can go to ericheightfoundation.org. That's Eric with a K, ericheightfoundation.org. Or you can go to tucsonaz.gov/police, and we have a link there as well. But we'd appreciate your generosity and support of our injured team member.
A young guy, and there's a lot of young people. We were talking before the show that in staffing, you've got some young people in the pipeline that want young men and women that still believe that this is a worthwhile profession.
We do. So we're bringing on anywhere from 60 to 70 team members a year. We just graduated another class. In fact, I just spent a few hours with them, with the deputy chief and two of our assistant chiefs yesterday, as they get ready to go out to their assigned divisions to start their field training. But I have the honor of going and working out with every class, except like Dylan's article. They got a snow day the other day, which is the first time in the history of the Tucson, 152 years of the Tucson Police Department. I think it's the first snow day we gave. So they were pretty excited. They got bagels and coffee from the chief instead of a 5-mile run, which I was looking forward to. They instill me with, we talk a lot in this country about, the news is depressing. There's not, people have changed. The amount of disrespect and the lack of, people just are not cordial with each other. And just this world we're sometimes living in, and to see these young, new, enthusiastic human beings that want to serve their community, they want to make a difference, and they're not buying, the narrative around the profession. We have some huge challenges in our profession. I've been really candid about that on this show and other shows. I think this year marks 8 years from this August from Ferguson. My call to action, across the country and here locally, is if we want different outcomes, that comes through investment. 8 years post Ferguson, post George Floyd, most, including our own in the state, most police officer academies are still based upon a 4-month academy, a month post basic, and another 4 months in field training. So 9 months of training does not equate, no reasonable person would concede that 9 months of training is appropriate for the expectations that we place on these young individuals.
Okay, Dylan Smith,
Certainly, it's a big responsibility. You have a whole lot of power out there on the street as a cop.
You.
What are you doing about, you mentioned that pipeline, 60 or 70 new officers coming on board every year does not seem like enough to grow the force to the level that you say is needed to adequately do the job.
No, it's not. So if, you know, the department, you know, has an attrition rate historically of 6 a month and can go as high as 9 a month. So if you lose 72 to 100 officers a month and we start with 60 to 75 and we have a 25%, you know, failure rate of that training program, you can do the math. And so until last year, every year we had been losing steadily 5% of our commissioned workforce. I'm really proud for a lot of different reasons to report that last year we got that number down to 1%. And we actually grew our total department size by 5% through really a focus on alternative response and expanding our community service officer position. So we got 50 new positions from mayor and council and city manager last year. We're going to be scaling that again, where I'm asking for another 50 this budget cycle. We're proving that we can fill those positions.
For community service officers?
Absolutely. And, here's a nice part about that is I can hire, you know, cream of the crop high school graduates that maybe don't have the means to go to college, or maybe they're not ready for that. We're living in a world where you don't have to go to college to be successful right now. So I can hire these kids at 18 years of age and pay them more than the median income in Tucson. They can be the breadwinner of their houses as, you know, a graduating high school team member. So we're looking at courting these our local young, our youth, just like U of A would. You know, courting an athlete and saying, hey, here's the future we can provide. Oh, by the way, once you get off probation, we're going to pay 100% of your education at University of Arizona as well. So this is a great place to work. We're really proud to call ourselves City of Tucson employees and Tucson Police Department members. And we're going to keep scaling not only our community service officers, but I've also asked city leadership this budget cycle for a new position called professional staff investigators. And so a CSO with a few years of investigative experience or anyone else out in the community, let's say somebody from DES or some other, you know, job that would give them investigative skills, or a direct hire from college graduating with a bachelor's degree, will hire you in and you basically are going to become a professional staff detective. And so you'll go through a modified academy. You won't have to work midnights for 3 years and take a test to promote to detective. Huh. And effectively, they'll be able to support investigative work. And the only two things they won't be able to do is to take someone into custody, put handcuffs on them, or call in a search warrant.
So for folks who don't know, quickly explain the difference between somebody who is a sworn officer and somebody who is a CSO. What does the CSO do?
Yeah, so a community service officer goes through a modified academy. They take a modified oath. Right now, you're seeing them out in the community wearing light blue uniforms. But effectively, we call it blank canvas thinking, where we are unsatisfied with our call response times. You know, a 750 deployable commissioned police force in a major city is just unacceptable. And the impact there is your lower level crime. So you've gone home, your house has been burglarized, or your favorite wagon was stolen when you got home out of your front yard, it's gone. We don't need a police officer to go to that call anymore.
Nobody to arrest, right?
There's nobody to arrest at that time. And frankly, unless the house needs to be cleared by somebody with a gun and a badge, and we can go do that, make the scene safe, and then we can insert our community service officers. They have the same training as police officers. They're going to dust, they're going to fingerprint, they're going to look for DNA, they're going to take your report, they're going to get all your serial numbers, and then do everything that a police officer can do. So that's just one example of how we've broadened their responsibilities, in that we can increase service delivery to our community members while also balancing the workload for our entire team.
There's a little bit of perception out there that the CSOs are just like the volunteers who help direct traffic at a scene. They do a whole lot more than that.
They're absolutely not just the volunteers. We've actually CSOs in investigative units. They're part of our analytical teams. They're out doing community engagement. The reality is the gun and the badge part of a police officer's job is about 5% of what we do. We are social service workers with a gun and a badge. Last year, we responded to just under 200,000 calls for service. We generated over 100,000 self-initiated activities. But there's so much work out there. And really, our philosophy at the City of Tucson is, let's put the right work in the right hands. And the other cool part about these CSOs is a percentage of them are eventually becoming police officers. So it's a little bit of a grow your own philosophy.
Year one was kind of like a coach rebuilding for you. And now you're in year two. It's getting the whole team together. Is there a strategic plan that will be part of the transition from year two to three?
They're absolutely, thanks, Bill. Great question. So last year was absolutely a evaluate where the department was at, evaluate where this, you know, the city was with our crime trends and problems and challenges and opportunities. And so we restructured the entire department from four bureaus to five. We refocused, made a huge focus on mental health and wellness and creating a climate within the department of trust and connection of our staff. They have a tough job. We got to make sure that we're giving them the tools that they need to do their job. Got to make sure they have the equipment and fair compensation, engage leadership and a balanced workload. I mean, that's the chemistry of having a high functioning team. So we absolutely got the right organizational structure set. We got the right leadership set. We, you know, we have a deputy chief, we have a chief of staff, we have all of our chiefs set, all the subordinate leaders. So it was a rebuilding year, you know, and we got that done. You know, part of that was also, okay, what are the major issues? And in late last year, into the beginning of this year, we developed a strategic plan, which I'll be talking about in the next week or two publicly. And it won't surprise you. And really, this wasn't a strategic plan, though, that is a pretty plan that's going to be public facing and you know, sits on a shelf and it's 100 pages. This was we brought in a professional to bring us in, and we, you know, through a consensus of the team saying, hey, what are the issues that we're really facing as an organization internally and externally? And then having a pro help us really get organized. So you're going to hear things about increased communication externally, internally. You're going to hear, you know, our strategies about our drug crime issues, our violent crime issues, our traffic fatality issues, the role that we play with the unsheltered population, because we're just a small slice of that conversation. So more to come on that.
You mentioned the number 750. That's how many sworn officers you have right now, about?
Right now we have, today, this day as we sit here right now, I have 804 commissioned, which includes 55 of those individuals are in training.
Okay. So what do you think you need?
You know, I don't, you know, in a world where we've decreased for almost 10 years straight, you know, I've floated when I first came here back on a 900 commission, 300 community service officer model. I think that's probably where we're going to land and what would be really comfortable for us. And at that point, I think if we're managing attrition, then we're growing our own community service officers that become police officers. So it's hard to know exactly what we're going to need because, you know, we've talked about alternative response, community safety, health, and wellness investment of other city employees that are taking on unsheltered population issues and you know, the narcotics end of the issue of treatment and investment and wraparound services. So the more team members that we have out there trying to solve complex problems, then I'm continuously evaluating what the total staff. So what I'm really focused on right now is it doesn't matter really how much I need it. It matters what I have. And, you know, the exciting part is one of the things that our city leadership, mayor and council, and the manager supported last year was a legislative change that allows team members who were concluding their five-year drop, which was in a retirement plan where you have to go at the end of that 5 years. The state approved a two-year extension. It's different, but it's in conjunction with. So once they finish their five, they can sign on to stay for their 12 or for their two. We have 12 team members this year that already have signed and approved extensions. So I'm confident that this would be the first year in a long time that we're actually going to be able to actually build our commission ranks. But these professional staff team members and how we scale is going to play a huge role. And the last piece I really want to tease with the community is we're really behind the times when it comes to a smart city approach to solving crime. That means overt cameras. And, you know, we have about 500 cameras throughout the city that we have access to, as does transportation and DOT and a lot of different things. But that's a smart way to create safe spaces. So, you know, if there's cameras in our parks and people are going there to do criminal activities, we want signs that say, hey, smile, you're on camera. And if you're committing criminal acts, we're going to catch you. Mm-hmm. And we want the same thing downtown and at major intersections. There's, you know, there's the ability to expand our license plate reader technology. All these things are political hot potatoes, right? Because there'll be parts of our community that want lower crime, but they don't want cameras. But the reality is we have to be smarter with the resources that we have, and technology is going to play a role in that.
All right, I'm going to pause right here, Dylan. You know what I want to talk about.
Feeling peckish?
Yeah, Mona's Danish Bakery. I should have brought some pastries in for the chief and his team and Dylan. I didn't, but something you can do, you can go up to Mona's. Right now, they're open for lunch. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Get there early on the weekends. People are really sometimes. They're always, actually, there's people waiting in line at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday at Mona's. When they open on 7 o'clock. The doors open. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. More with the chief and Dylan Smith right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dylan Smith is here from TucsonSentinel.com. Chief Chad Kazmar, our Chief Tucson Police Department, our Friday Focus interview. All right, now one of the big pieces that we have not talked about, fentanyl, the demand for fentanyl. Meth is still a problem. In fact, the combination is out there.
Yeah, Tim Stoller did a great article on it, I think a weekend ago or two. Mm-hmm. And the reality is he's right. If we didn't have the supply, or if we didn't have the demand issues, we wouldn't be struggling with the supply issues. There are certainly issues with border security and its ability to just, you know, come over here. But I'll tell you, you know, this corridor, our Southern Arizona corridor, we see over 60% of the fentanyl in the country comes through our area. And it's a challenge. And the bad part of that for us is we're so close, it's affordable. And the affordability of fentanyl, you know, in COVID times, people were paying, much like opiates, if you were getting a fake opiate pill, you know, $20+ a pill. Those pills are now, you know, 20 cents to 60 cents, depending on the bulk in which you're buying those at. So it is absolutely a crisis in our country. It's a crisis in our own community. I tell you, there's, you know, this is where, you know, much like violent crime, I get beat up a little bit, as does the city leadership and county leadership on, well, what are you doing? It's, you know, and are there, you know, I get asked, are there liberal politics that are keeping us from doing enforcement? That's absolutely not the case. The use of it has just overwhelmed our country. It's overwhelmed our federal partners. It's overwhelming local jurisdictions. It's overwhelming our wraparound service providers. You know, last year we did over 3,000 narcotics arrests. In about 250 deflections. And I'd like to see that deflection number come up, and we're going to be working on that with the team, because coming off of fentanyl requires you to have a two-part process of chemical detox and psychological support. You know, you don't go to jail and get better. When we take people to jail, what we're trying to do is we're trying to leverage them into treatment. That's the real solution to this narcotics issue. So last year, 3,000 arrests. I'll tell you, we're putting a lot of strain. We did over 100,000 on-site activities last year in areas where we're getting community feedback that, you know, the neighborhoods and business owners are having problems with the issues related to narcotics use and fentanyl use. This year alone, we've gone to over 30,000, you know, 33,000 calls for service, over 12,000 additional officer on-site activities. That's up 43%. That's because they feel safe. They know we're going to support them, you know, if they make a mistake. That's a big part of them being out and doing their job. But we're putting strain on other parts of the system. And we are seeing, you know, simple possession cases being declined just because the public defenders, the Pima County Attorney's Office, our STEPS program, drug court, all of these systems have to be invested in to meet the demands. Mm-hmm. This isn't just a police problem. It's not just an officer wanting to not want to do the work. It's also, do other part of the systems have the capacity to receive the work?
And then there's the whole unsheltered population and the drug component there.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, I always tell people 10 years ago, you saw a lot of unsheltered population folks, you know, drinking 40-ounce beers. And you haven't seen that in the last 3 years here in Tucson. You don't see it anymore. You don't see it because the fentanyl is so much cheaper to use. 6 out of 10 fentanyl pills being produced right now have lethal levels of fentanyl.
Wow.
So what happens is the users are using fentanyl to come down and they're chasing it with methamphetamine to come up. So most of the users are poly users. We don't come across as much methamphetamine. It's the second, you know, it's the leading second narcotic that's causing, you know, nearly 500 overdose deaths in our Pima County region last year. But 70% of those deaths were related to fentanyl. And we don't see it because it's not as cheap as the fentanyl. So we it's not unusual for us to come across a user who has, you know, 3 to 10 pills in their possession. Mm.
Dylan Smith.
Let's talk a little bit about the folks who are unsheltered. What are you doing, you know, proactively to play a role in helping people get into housing? And we have so many folks living on our streets, living in our washes. You know, what role does the police department play in, you know, not just responding to a crime that happens there, but being involved in trying to, you know, help people out of this circumstance? Because if they're in that circumstance, they are most likely, you know, going to be at great risk to turning to drugs, to eventually turning to crime.
Absolutely. So, you know, about 2 years ago, we were really the primary city resource that was tasked with dealing with unsheltered population issues through our mental health support team, our homeless outreach team, and our substance misuse resource team. So I'm proud, you know, of the effort city leadership has made. Again, I know they frankly don't get enough credit and they get beat up quite a bit about, well, it's not enough. Well, you know, complex problems take complex strategies, and those don't work overnight. You know, I mean, we have a great basketball team. It didn't work out great for us last night. We're gonna have to reset and go back to the drawing board and get refocused for next year. And we're talking about folks who are out on the streets, and there's really, you know, the economy has even changed that. Not everybody who's unsheltered right now in our community is because they have a substance misuse disorder. Some people can't afford to live. They're living in their cars. But the issue that I think you're asking me about, Dylan, is primarily the folks living in tents or living in washes or living behind businesses. Fentanyl has played a huge role in just the explosion, you know, mm-hmm. of those folks because it's just so accessible. So through community safety, health, and wellness and the expansion of resources, and again, very political, housing first philosophy of the city, we have 3 other department program directors and directors who are involved with going out and doing proactive work to get people off the street. Our philosophy is to get somebody back on their feet, you got to put a roof over their head. So we still have our units that we call community outreach resource engagement. So CORE is the, you know, the title that we have the Miss Certain Hot under. But as the city continues to invest resources and expansion in our community safety, health, and wellness, then I can actually repurpose some of those, you know, those police officers for doing different things. So, you know, there's 3 tiers of camps now. And we're going to get, one of the program directors on to further expand that conversation. But we only go to tier three camps now, which are a safety issue. So we've dropped about 60% workload on, having to do all of the camps ourselves. So I think we're looking at just under a 2-week turnaround on camp assessment right now. We'd like to get that down to within a week, is our goal as a city. So it's just going to take time. Again, these are folks who are being onboarded who have social service background. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. We have an amazingly generous community with nonprofits. I'd like to see them be a little more organized and transparent in their data. My call to action, if they're getting local, state, or federal dollars, they should be transparent with what they're doing with those dollars, who they're serving, and what the impact is. So I think there's a growth opportunity there for our community, and that's one of the things that we're working with.
And you do hear that people say, let's just arrest the unsheltered people. Let's round them up. Is it a crime to be, basic question, is it a crime to be unsheltered?
It is not a crime to be homeless. It's a crime to be trespassing, for aggressive panhandling, shoplifting, some of the lower, typically the crime that we see with our unsheltered population is that lower level crime. The issue is that it's a quality of life for everybody in that area, for businesses that are shutting down. I mean, it's a big enough issue where even box stores struggle and have closed. We've closed a lot of Walgreens, Walmarts are struggling. There's a lot of folks who are struggling. So as the city has invested in the proactive engagement and wraparound service, and housing, that's allowed me to take a little more traditional role, again, in an environment of making it safe for officers to go out and do proactive police work, of saying, you can't just commit crime here in Tucson with impunity. You can't just walk in and take a tin and walk out and not pay for it. You can't just walk in and take food and not pay for it. So, we're doing felony level cases on repeat offenders who are going in and just shoplifting every day. We're issuing more and more trespass notices and doing area restrictions on folks, which will keep them out of areas. The idea is to generate enough discomfort where folks will actually go to treatment. That's the solution here. This is not an arrestable. The jail's not big enough. We have increased the amount of arrests that we're doing. The folks are either released in pretrial services or put into programs. There's going to be part of those programs folks are going to fall out of, because when you're dealing with addiction, you just don't get, and I know I have family members who struggle with it. You just don't tend to go to rehab once and have it stick. So again, what I'd ask for the community and most of the community is understanding and patient, knows that the city's making investments, as is the county. But there's certainly folks that are pretty vocal about us not doing as much as we should be as well.
The retailers are hurting with this shoplifting. I know that we had Michael on, Michael Guyman from the Chamber. He said that's the number one issue that his members are saying. This shoplifting is just out of control.
The shoplifting is definitely higher than I'd like it to be. And we do special deployments where we go out there. So staff that aren't having to respond to calls for service, then when we get those calls or connecting with the businesses and they have a shoplifter, a prolific shoplifter, we go in and we address that. It's going to take collaboration. We're working with all of our big box stores to really, help us prioritize the folks that are really the top offenders, which are really hitting them the hardest. And that's, I'll tell you, the county attorney and I have our agreements and disagreements. That is one area that we're doing really well with our partners there in prosecuting folks on those felony cases.
Okay, Dylan, before we wrap things up, you've got an item or two left.
Something that has attracted a lot of public complaints, certainly the nuisance value of it is high, dangerous for the folks involved, but the drag racing, the street takeovers, some of these things are just absolutely astounding what people are doing right in the middle of our major streets.
Yeah, so thank you for asking about that. Another one of my big challenges. And again, in my conversations with major city chiefs and almost major cities, thank you, social media, that's what's driving this behavior. I really want to make the distinction, because I'm a car guy as well. This is not a car club, law-abiding car club issue here in Tucson. There is another contingency of folks who do drag racing. We encourage them to go out to our drag racing venues and not doing it on the city
streets.
It's not
people just cruising.
But these are intersection takeover groups. Their goal is to take over an intersection for 3 to 10 minutes to block it off, and they basically, they hang out of cars. It's a little bit of a slideshow. And the problem with these is folks are getting clipped in cars. I mean, the obvious problem is you can't lawfully do that and shut down an intersection. It's not safe. Two, we got people hanging out of cars. We have young adults who are standing there and like to get as close as they can, and these vehicles are striking community members. Shots are being fired. The other interesting part about these groups is they do not recognize at mass 100 people the authority of a police officer. So when, you know, we've had cases where they've surrounded police officers, they've thrown beer bottles, they've shot guns, they've thrown firecrackers. So we're taking in a very aggressive role. If you are participating with your parents' car, and parents, listen up here, and we find them, we will impound that vehicle, and we will do everything in our power to arrest these individuals. We arrested 6 of them 2 weekends ago. We impounded all their vehicles. If you're going to Discount Tire because you have one bald tire on your vehicle and you have a teenager, it's probably not because you have an alignment issue. It's because your kids are participating with this extremely dangerous. But spread the word. We're watching social media. We have infiltrated your groups, and we are not going to tolerate that behavior in this town.
Should we bring back red light cameras?
You know, again, I don't get paid to be popular. Yes, I agree with Dylan. You know, we need to be a little more clear about intersection delineation. I think we need to evaluate the funds. We could even have conversations around, you know, a progressive accountability where you don't get points the first time. But those red light cameras, which I received a ticket from one myself, I'll just say, you know, they work. They work. I think, Dylan, you said you got one too, buddy. but they do impact. They do modify behavior, and I would love to see them come back. 30,000 tickets we wrote last year, though. Not tickets. We had 30,000 traffic contacts last year. I think about 8,000 of those were written warnings. I don't ask my staff to write tickets. I ask them to have traffic contacts.
Is city traffic a part? I know you haven't publicly disclosed the strategic plan, but I would think city traffic would be in there.
Absolutely. We had 99 fatalities last year. It's still an unacceptable number. It's one of, you know, an area that I feel like I failed a little bit as my first year as chief. So we play a role in it. I probably took a little, you know, I wanted to get the troops excited about getting back out there and doing traffic enforcement. I'm an avid runner and cyclist. I spend a lot of times on city streets. I'll be, you know, throughout our community tomorrow afternoon doing the loop ride. Sam Credio is doing a lot with education. So this is an all hands on deck, but it's really the community, right? This is a community issue. Like you choose to drive if, you know, and I'm talking over 10 miles an hour. I'm not talking 5-6 miles an hour. Over 10 miles an hour is when things get really dangerous for folks. You're distracted with your phone. We had a young woman who was killed in a collision last year, with texting and being distracted. So call to action to the community. Let's put our phones away. Let's not be distracted by them and have safe streets.
And again, before we go, the injured police officer you have disclosed today on the show, his name, this is a 25-year-old police officer hit by a drunk driver. There is an effort underway to help this officer financially. Why don't we close with a recap there?
Yep, Kyle Lorenz, we'd appreciate your support. EricHeightFoundation.org, that's Eric with a K, or TucsonAZ.gov/police. And by the way, we're recruiting community service officers and police officers. Join TucsonPD.org.
Okay. Dylan, anything final that you would like to, before we wrap it up?
Well, we should maybe mention that this is kind of a drinking holiday. And
yes, maybe, indeed.
Maybe people should, while you enjoy, be responsible and safe and respect others.
Beautiful point. Lyft and Uber, folks. We have a great downtown. We have great, you know, drinking establishments throughout the entire city. Have fun tonight. Be safe. Get a designated driver or get a cab, but don't drink and drive.
All right, Chief, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Dylan Smith will have a few more comments right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to the police chief, Chad Kazmaier. We're trying to bring the chief in every quarter for our Friday Focus interview. Dylan Smith is here. Dylan celebrating St. Patrick's Day and his 17th wedding anniversary. And I saw a picture on Facebook. You really went all out on that wedding 17 years ago. You got a kilt.
Oh yeah,
for your Irish background.
That's how Irish Scots. That's how I got into wearing the kilt was when Marie and I were planning our wedding. She sort of offhandedly suggested that I do so because she's quite Scottish and Irish, and I said sure, okie doke. And then now it's kind of a thing.
Well, St. Patrick's Day. It's something. It's like Anne and I were married on May 5th, so. It's easy to remember Cinco de Mayo, so you're not going to forget.
Yeah, but it's kind of because it is, also a kind of a renowned amateur night. So, some years we go out and, whoop it up, and other years we kind of stay at home and, keep things a little more mellow.
This might be a good one just to be mellow.
Yeah, that's what we're planning. I mean, certainly, people should go have some fun, but it is a Friday night St. Patrick's Day. I'm kind of like, I think I'm just going to have a nice, a whiskey and have some Guinness on my back porch and chill out a little bit.
This town needs reporters, especially with the major newspapers across the country cutting back. How are you doing at the Tucson Sentinel in actually full-time reporters?
It's thanks to the tremendous support we get from people in this community as a nonprofit. We've got seven full-time staff members right now and a pretty good stable of freelancers and people who contribute because they believe in the cause and, you know, will go write a story about something for us. So it's, you know, we're still steadily growing, and that's really down to, you know, local small business support and readers who understand the importance of truly local reporting on this town.
Well, you look at the way this town, even say 15 years ago, I mean, you were working in traditional media, and look at the way it is right now.
Well, there used to be hundreds more professional reporters in this town 15 years ago. You know, we are down at least 300 reporters from where we were
really?
At that point. And you think about that, that's, you know, so many fewer people who are digging into things, being able to watchdog government meetings, to dig into records and files and be out there listening to people who are doing the creative, amazing things that so many people in this town do, you know, telling the stories of how this community functions and giving people context is vital. You know, living in an informed place is important. If nobody really knows what's going on, and they, especially, you know, locally, it's so easy to get kind of distracted by national news. You know, it's compelling. It's presented mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. a very dramatic mm-hmm. fashion. Depending mm-hmm. on your point of view, there's a channel just for you to tell you what you want to believe and, you know, run down the other side. But local news is all about facts. Here's what's up. Mm-hmm. Here's what somebody did. Here's what they're not doing. Here's what the problems are. And what can we do to figure things out? That's an important part of living in a place that works. And I firmly believe that, you know, I live in this town because I love it. I want to have Tucson and Pima County be the best they can possibly be. And that requires more people knowing what's up. And that, you know, essentially requires more reporters poking away at things and watchdogging and making sure that our civic leaders are actually doing their jobs.
Where can people find out about you?
Go to TucsonSentinel.com. If you want to pitch in, go to TucsonSentinel.com/watchdog. You become a member of the Watchdog Club and help us keep digging into things, digging into the desert dirt, finding where the bones are.
It is a free service, but you do need support.
Exactly. You know, it's free for everyone to read. We think that's important, that we don't have a paywall. You know, everyone in town, people across the country can all read as many of our reports as they want to. But, you know, it requires money. We have, you know, full-time experienced professionals, yeah. Some people who are the best in their field doing this job, and nobody's getting rich doing this, but we, you know, we've got to make sure that they can keep a roof over their head and, you know, can feed their kids.
And they should be compensated. All right, Dylan Smith, thank you very much. Appreciate your support over the years for what we do here.
Well, you are very welcome, and, you know, we very much appreciate everything you've done for the Sentinel. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much. We'll take a break right here. Dan Gibson with the St. Patrick's Day edition of Weekend Watch right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region.
The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Let's do it. Weekend Watch presented by our friends over in Southwest New Mexico. That would be Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org, your first stop before you make that 3-hour drive east of Tucson. First stop to find out about all the great things to do, some great places to stay, and some great places to dine as well. southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is, Dan Gibson, with our St. Patrick's Day edition of Weekend Watch. Are you wearing the green today, Mr. Gibson?
No, not at all. Not the slightest, actually.
Green.
My family's not Irish. I feel like a poser. You know, it just doesn't read right. I'll put on a Pogues record later. How about that?
That'll
be my treatment for the celebration.
Dylan Smith with us in studio. And Dylan, unlike you, Dan, Dylan is all into St. Patrick's Day.
You know what I mean? I don't want to tread on someone else's.
Yeah, everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day.
There you go.
Yeah, that just feels, doesn't feel right. I had a Donald Drain, who is the head of the foundation board here at TMC, and an Irish, actual Irishman, gave me a cookie. So I guess that probably, probably should have just written that out.
There you go. How about a few highlights on this St. Patrick's Day weekend?
Well, Hotel Congress is always going to do something for any occasion, probably, but St. Patrick's Day in particular. It's free until 6 p.m., $5 cover after 6 p.m. Doors, food and drink specials start at 2 p.m. So get call the Uber now, head on over there. Live music starts at 5 p.m. on the plaza, 8 inside the club. Corned beef and cabbage, chocolate mint cupcakes, $1 off Guinness pub cans, and $5 shots of Jameson. So, that's a solid evening all around, and I'm sure there's music and all kinds of stuff happening.
That might just tempt me off my porch.
Right.
That sounds
you're not that far now. It's on your way home. So,
I don't have to do any work the rest of the afternoon. I'll just stop there.
That would be the perfect,
there won't be any news.
Perfect place for Dylan to celebrate his 17th wedding anniversary tonight. All right, what else you got?
Well, if you're on the east side, maybe you might want to check out Black Rock Brewers. It's not just a St. Patrick's Day party. It is also a fundraiser for the Tucson Celtic Fest and Highland Games, which is a weird collision of cultures happening at once. But still, nonetheless, that starts at 6 p.m. There'll be giveaways. They're having a St. Patrick's trivia. They'll be raffling off some baskets to raise dough for the 37th annual Tucson Celtic Festival and Skyless Highland Games. Also, I imagine they have beer. And it's a nice little east side spot for people to check out.
I could do another one. Give me a third
one. All right. Well, speaking of beer, they're also having a St. Patrick's Day celebration at 1912 Brewery. This is for you West Side compatriots over there off Grant and by Forbes, I think, is the street to turn in on. They're having Danielle's Cooking will be serving up corned beef and cabbage. They have a special St. Patrick's Day-themed beer release called the Irish Sobriety, a whiskey-aged Irish Red Ale. And then, of course, they have a green beer because I think that's the law. That starts, well, it's actually starting already. It already started at noon. So you're 1 hour behind everyone there, but it should be a good time.
All right, Dan Gibson, have a great St. Patrick's Day. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, Dylan, any final thoughts from you?
Be safe this weekend, everyone, please.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. My thanks to everybody here at Bustos Media Tucson for making us feel so comfortable. Thanks, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our show. Bill Buckmaster saying, have a great and a very safe weekend.